You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Papa, can you hear me?
I try to think of something with father in it. I'm just like, oh, Yentl. I know that one.
And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon.
Well, he didn't abandon anybody on purpose.
We joked about before this review for the movie The Father, how do we make this review funny? I'm trying, because... Oh my goodness.
It's bleak.
Yeah.
It's bleak and sad.
You know, it's bleak, and yet it's not trying to just revel in misery.
Yeah.
You know, like, it is sad. It's a really sad story. It's not like a nihilistic film in its misery.
Yeah. It's not Amour, if you guys ever witnessed that tragedy.
But I do love Amour a lot.
Oh, the saddest 2 hours of my life.
That is maybe the saddest film ever made.
Which is funny, too, because I feel like this was shot in the same apartment as Amour. Doesn't it look like the exact same set?
Yeah.
If you just saturated it a little bit and actually made it look like there was some real color.
If you take the Amour set and add in one blue light, it's this set.
Yeah. Well, that's the difference between a Michael Haneke film and then a Florian Zeller film.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to be fair, this is the first film that this guy's ever directed, because he's not a director, he's a playwright, actually.
Yes.
So
now, did he direct his own plays, or is he just a writer prior to this?
Ooh, just a writer. Shots fired.
I'm not sure. Like, there's been multiple productions of this one, because it's based on a French play, Le Père, you know, the father in French. But,
yeah,
it's been adapted already into a film in France called Florida.
Flowrider?
Florida.
I
thought it was French at first.
Friends,
like,
love the Florida.
Florida, it's called.
Florida.
Gotcha.
In this case, I think, Melina, you mentioned too, is that this one has a very interesting production with getting the lead actor involved in this movie.
Yes, Anthony Hopkins. Sir Anthony Hopkins, I'm sorry. Didn't mean to be disrespectful. Mm-hmm. This obviously was a screenplay adapted from the play Le Père, as you were saying. And apparently, Zeller wanted no one else but Anthony Hopkins in this role, which is why he wrote the character with lines that he wanted Anthony Hopkins to say, and that is why the main character is, in fact, named Anthony. I guess if you're British and proper, that's how you pronounce Anthony.
Anthony. But we should also introduce ourselves just before we get into the actual synopsis, because I am Justin over here, and as I mentioned, that is Melina over there.
Hello.
Hey. And over there is Davey.
Hi, hello.
Hey, hey. And down here, in my view at least, is Bradley.
Hello.
I feel like we got a Brady Brunch thing going on.
Yeah.
It's like, here's the story of a man named Bradley.
The Bradley Bunch.
I also forgot how mirrors work, so I pointed the wrong way.
We are in Bradley's flat, according to his name on his little screen here, so this is the Bradley Bunch indeed.
Yes. We should mention this movie is very British, and therefore the word flat is used a lot.
Yeah, which, Bradley, why don't you give us a very quick just synopsis here? What is this movie about?
Well, first I need to know which one of you stole my watch. It's an important watch. And if I don't get it back...
Bradley, you told us where you put it. You told us just an hour ago.
Guys, it's a collector's edition, all right? I mean, nobody has Tamagotchis anymore. It's a big loss.
Oh, no.
It was me. It was Davey the whole time. I stole the watch. For audio listeners, I'm wearing a watch band right now just for this joke. Subscribe to oneofus.net.
We can confirm.
Anyway.
So the watch, Anthony's missing his watch, and he's always wondering where it is. Maybe it's an allegory for how he's missing time and losing track of moments in his life. Oh, clever film. Anyways, Anthony Hopkins plays Anthony, an old cranky man who's very eccentric, who seems to be losing his mind, and his daughter Anne, played by the amazing Olivia Colman, who's trying to help him find a way to be okay with change. And we, the audience, very incredibly are put in Anthony's shoes, and it's almost like Anthony's own brain is gaslighting him. And we experience, at least for the first time I've seen in a film, what it actually might be like to have memory loss or Alzheimer's, I'm guessing Anthony suffers. I don't know if they ever...
Well, in this case, it's dementia.
Dementia, right. Thank you. Dementia. It's terrifying, and it's not a fun watch, but it's probably got the most amazing performance of the year so far. Or was this a 2020 film that got pushed back? I'm not sure.
I was going to say, Riz Ahmed's going to have a word with you if we're counting.
I haven't seen The Sound of Metal yet, but I'm excited
to. Well, so that's the thing I wanted to say, is that this one is an Oscar qualifier along with Sound of Metal. And I've been fortunate to see quite a few of the films now that are up for Best Actor, like, you know, the big contenders. Yeah. And I would say that so far, Steven Yeun, Riz Ahmed, and now Anthony Hopkins absolutely all deserve to get nominated for Best Actor this year. Because...
Oh, yeah.
Anthony Hopkins, the movie is built on him.
Literally.
Like, yeah. This whole movie, you know, in terms of the writing, in terms of the filmmaking, in terms of his performance, it all revolves around Anthony Hopkins. And he carries it without any struggle whatsoever in this film.
Yeah. No, he absolutely does command it in a way where you think back to when he used to predominantly be in leading roles. And you're like, it is so good to see you back in that position because you still got it. He's got so much charisma that's so unique to him.
And one of the big things is that his comeback, really, in the last few years, has all been doing stage plays for the most part. Because, I mean, Westworld brought him back to the public eye. But then, ever since then, he's been mostly doing adaptations of stage plays with The Dresser, with The Two Popes, with this film. That seems to be his strength, of doing, like, big, talky, stagey productions.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's a bad thing sometimes, because movies that are built on stage plays can sometimes feel very limited, very constrained. But with the right writer, director, and crew, you can really make it feel alive. And even though the majority of this takes place in, like, two locations, maybe three at most, you never feel like it's too limited either, you know? And that's just really good use of the production design on this film, too.
Anybody who's ever had maybe a relative or specifically a grandparent or a parent who has dealt with memory loss in the form of Alzheimer's or even just dementia, which can be something that people can be afflicted by without being a symptom of another underlying disease. But a lot of this revolves around the fact that he is getting to that point where it's not, you know, everybody who's had this experience has gotten to that point where we're like, this person can't really take care of themselves anymore. And it's becoming extremely difficult to have them living here with us when they barely understand what's going on. Sometimes they don't recognize you. Sometimes they don't understand where they are, when they are. And he is at a point where he just wants, more than anything, to stay in his flat. He wants just to be left alone. And he wants people to stop acting from his, at least in his perspective, so utterly strangely, which you are right that this is very unique in the way that it tells the story. It's not the first time that we've seen a main character in a movie suffering from some sort of disease, but I think this is definitely the first time where we've seen it through the mind's eye in such a way to where the film is leaving you just as confused and disoriented as the person you're watching. And it makes you realize, from their perspective, everyone around them is acting completely irrationally. Everybody is plotting against them. Nothing makes sense. Time is bending. It almost plays out like horror or a thriller to them. Just that sense of what's everybody doing? Why is everyone acting so strange?
Yeah, there was a point I couldn't tell what day it was anymore in this film. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, has it been like, it almost felt like The Lighthouse, where it's like, how long have we been here? 2 days? 4 years?
You do have the Lighthouse beard going on right now, so I think that works.
I am Willem Dafoe, actually, believe it or not. So,
editing-wise, this thing reminded me the most of something like Synecdoche, New York, or I'm Thinking of Ending Things, with how it's structured, because it does the same thing. It has a much more realistic interpretation or realistic reasoning for doing that, as opposed to the metaphysical stuff that Kaufman likes to go into.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it does a lot of those same tricks really well, where, like you're saying, has it been a day? Has it been 10 years? Are some of these people real? Are some of them completely imaginary? Are their faces different? It is stressful and it is horrifying, much like something like I'm thinking of ending things.
Yeah. And you were saying, Justin, that, you know, when a play is translated to film, it can run the risk of feeling limited. But I think that's so perfect here, the mm-hmm. fact that this does, I think for about maybe like 95 to 98% of this takes place in the same setting. And I think that that's actually kind of perfect for the way that they want the story to come across to you, to where, because this is all taking place predominantly in a single room of a single apartment, that's why it's so that's why it can be so confusing when he's having a conversation with his daughter, only for him to turn a corner, and then suddenly, for some reason, she's gone and some other stranger is there, and you and him are like, who the hell are you? When did you get here? Where did my daughter go? And yeah. You're just as confused as he is, because you're like, wait a minute, what just happened? And I think I think that it really brings across what it's like to experience basically your mind kind of deteriorating, and without ever feeling exploitative or just being misery porn, but instead is just finding a very clever and creative way of getting it across. And I really appreciated that. It really did feel like watching a play in that regard. Very dialogue driven, almost relatively plotless.
Yeah.
It's more of just kind of watching the day-to-day, the very disorganized day-to-day of this man's life as he continues to lose his memory.
Yeah, day-to-day or the same day.
Maybe even year-to-year, you don't know.
Yeah, there was literally a point where a scene loops and you come exactly back to the same place where you started the scene, but after the scene's already happened. And you're like, wait a minute, am I going crazy? Did I just watch this scene?
Right. You know?
Dang screeners skipping around.
I feel like I need to go get a CAT scan after watching this movie, because it's so disorienting at points. And I remember reading the press notes, and they were kind of explaining how, you know, obviously the decision to film this in a kind of a nonlinear way was very intentional. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen movies like 21 Grams and Memento, it definitely reminded me of those, not in any way tone or plot, but just the idea of kind of playing around with time. But unlike those movies, this movie doesn't ask you or require you to go and try to put everything together or try to bring any order to it, because it's just supposed to reflect how disorganized and confusing reality is for this person who is really struggling to understand what's going on around him as the disease is becoming more aggressive. Everyone's trying their best to deal with this as best they can, except maybe for the husband. Won't go into too much detail there, but yeah, he's played by Rufus Sewell, so there's a fair chance he's playing a jerk, is all I'm going to say.
He's very good.
He is very good at that.
The movie doesn't want to be solved, per se. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of a mystery, and it's kind of a puzzle, but more of a puzzle where the goal is the act of grasping at straws and trying to find something to anchor yourself and hold on to. I feel like if there was a concrete explanation for everything, that wouldn't really be it wouldn't make the film any better. Unlike a lot of those films where once you figure out the puzzle box, you're like, yes, I did it. I am the true critic. But here it's just the act of trying to process new information as fast as it comes, because this movie is tight and it will throw things at you very quickly and say, you're going to have to ruminate on that for the next 30 minutes. And during those 30 minutes, we're also going to throw 20 more things at you. So buckle up, fuckos. It's time.
We should talk a little bit about just the performances here. Anthony Hopkins, no doubt in my mind, he's going to get nominated for Best Actor. Yeah. And I think that this could very well be the year that we could see him win it again. I would not be surprised if it went to him this year, because this is almost a love letter to Anthony Hopkins, in the way that you were saying, it is literally built around him as an actor. Olivia Colman, who, my God, every time I see her, I'm like, how the hell did it take until The Favorite for everyone to realize what an absolute treasure you are?
Oh, yeah.
And she's amazing here too, playing his daughter Anne, who has him living with her and her husband. And if there's an anchor here, it's absolutely her, not just emotionally, but what ties you to reality while you watch this movie. And it is a very much needed character. Best supporting actors, like best supporting actress, like her, like just give her the nomination.
Well, I would almost argue lead, because she's in a good chunk of this movie too.
Yes, but category fraud's one hell of a drug.
Yes.
Yeah, so that will depend on that. But you know, there's a lot of great ensemble performances here too. Like, you know, there's only like 10 people in this whole movie, but each person comes in, you remember them, like Rufus Sewell, as we mentioned.
Olivia Williams!
Lovely Olivia.
Reppin' the Dollhouse cast until I die, because that show never got enough love.
Well, and she's an acclaimed British stage actress, too, so that's why, when I was a missionary in England, I saw her on a bunch of posters, I'm like, oh, I know that woman!
Yes.
But Bradley, we haven't heard from you, like, why don't we get some of your impressions?
Well, I liked all the performances as well. You've all covered it. Imogen Poots, I'm always happy to see, because she usually only picks kind of weird roles.
Yeah.
Now, there's nothing weird per se about any of these roles, but there was about hers, because you don't know who she is, where she came from, just that she's here to watch him, and he kind of reminds her of someone else. His favorite daughter, absolutely. She was a dancer, she was a painter, she was everything. And you never know who the hell this person actually was, and when you quote-unquote find out, you still don't.
Yeah.
And I think that is so cool that we're always just as confused as Anthony is throughout this whole thing. That's probably going to be unbearable for a lot of people, but it's only an hour and a half, you can make it, and then you'll have something sophisticated to talk about at parties, like, oh yeah, so I saw The Sound of Metal and The Father, so I've earned this monocle.
I thought this was gonna be like a big slow, like big baby kind of film, and yet at some point I looked at my watch and I'm like, wow, it's already been an hour. I have not even felt a lick of the runtime on this. It goes by so quickly.
It's very short. When I saw that it was, I mean, you could tell by the structure basically when you're starting to get to the end. Mm-hmm. And I looked at the timer on the screener and I was like, I can't believe that this is almost over. It is, I think it's barely an hour and 30 minutes. That's pretty short. If you think back to movies like Amour, which tells a similar story, but just from a, if you think this is bleak, then just go use that movie as a litmus test for misery porn.
Michael Haneke's a different creature. Doesn't count.
He is not human.
Michael Haneke's getting old sucks. And life is and life is just freaking miserable.
They were both still very beautiful people in Amour. So they had that going.
Oh yes. But with that movie where that was, I think that was well beyond 2 hours long. And it is purposefully very, very slow. And like this, it is relatively plotless. This, however, is very dialogue driven. It's not witty per se. It's more just, it's very smart and it's very sharp.
It's very natural.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not quirky.
No. Like, and even it has moments where it's actually funny, but it's not funny like a jokey, like haha kind of way. It's just like, oh, it's like a conversation. Sometimes people will slip into little humorous bits now and then.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that this will be a film that you could find, that you might find surprisingly watchable given what it's about, because it's not trying to manipulate you. It's not trying to make you sad.
No.
You can't help but feel sad because this is never a good situation. It's something that we all like to pretend doesn't exist. It's something that we don't want to ever think about. But I think that this movie succeeds so well in being more about the relationships between these people and how memory loss and aging can really affect that. And I think that it was very bold for it to tell you that story without trying to make you cry, without trying to ruin your day. Because I could go back and watch this again easily.
Whoa.
Yeah, like I honestly, that's the thing, like, you know, I'm going to start segueing to final thoughts just to talk about that. But, you know, when you say that you could watch this again, I absolutely could watch this again. Like the instant that this ended, I told my wife, I'm just like, I'm getting this on Blu-ray. When it comes out, I'm getting on Blu-ray, I'm going to watch it again. Because it's just so engaging. Like, I was never, you know, like, I seem to come across this when I watch movies like this or Sound of Metal, where if it really hooks me emotionally, it will never lose my interest. If it keeps up that momentum. Because this one just had me all the way through. And it's just so great. I also, like, on top of the great writing and acting going on, I really gotta give props to the editor here, Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah.
That broke my brain when I saw that for a second. I was like, Yorgos, what?
Yeah, no, my wife looked at me and was like, oh, it's the guy from The Favorite. I'm like, that different last name. It's like, oh.
But it's close enough that, like, if you're not totally paying attention, your brain does a 180 on that.
Why would they show his name before the directed by credits?
I mean, well, to be fair, how many people out there are named Lorgos? You'd be forgiven for being confused.
Fair enough, but
maybe a lot. I don't know. I'm not Greek.
Yes, I'm sorry if I just offended some Greek people out there.
I absolutely adore this movie. Mm-hmm. This is absolutely, you know, I keep saying this when I get these Oscar films, but this is now on my top five of the year. Like, it's battling with Sound of Metal and Minari at the moment for my top five, which I'm catching up. I got a lot I'm catching up on right now. Yeah. But this is... It was just so good.
Yeah.
It was so good. And I honestly have no complaints. I think everyone who watches this, if you can handle watching a sad movie, this is absolutely going to move you. Like, honestly, there was a point where the last time that Olivia Colman and Anthony Hopkins talked to each other in the film, mm-hmm. my wife just broke into tears. She just couldn't contain it anymore. Oh, she got so emotional in that scene.
You'd be hard-pressed.
I was close.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I am going to give this movie, you know, I'm gonna do it. I'm going to give this 10 out of 10 slaps.
I feel like there needs to be a special sound effect for when someone gives a movie a perfect score.
Just confetti falls.
It's not like it's a technical marvel. It's not like it's like a big thing. But when I think about, did I enjoy this movie all the way through? I did. Mm-hmm. I had literally no point when I didn't like this movie.
Yeah.
So that qualifies as a 10 to me. Bradley, why don't you go? What?
This is something. Something's weird going on now. It's very strange. I enjoyed this. Probably not as much as you. This hurt my heart as well. And certain heartsick I don't like, so I just kind of avoid it. This film presents the unbearable truth that you can love someone but be completely incapable or qualified to take care of them, even if they need you. And that sucks. Usually
hard truths.
Yeah.
My grandmother is going through the early stages of this, and we are experiencing that very hardcore. Like, gradually, it's starting to come to that point.
Mm-hmm. But I will say, though, I do love that the film is honest about that. A lot of films, when someone is ill with this, even Hollywood-conditioned ill, like that cute one with Gosling and McAdams, is it? The Notebook?
Oh, The Notebook, yeah.
Yeah, when his kids are like, gee, Dad, when are you going to just bury her?
That is the cute Alzheimer's movie, you know, isn't it?
Are you just going to get rid of her and spend time with your grandkids? You're like, well, I love Ellie. I can't get rid of her. And the audience is all boo at the kids, right? Like, you're bad
My
for
wife
that.
Used to be Rachel McAdams. I'm not going anywhere.
Exactly. But this film is honestly like, isn't that choice just heartbreaking? And I'm like, yeah, it is. I'm not. I love you, Olivia Colman. This isn't your fault. You got to live your life. And
we're going to start crying in this review.
I'm sorry. And Anthony Hopkins, absolutely brilliant. I haven't seen Sound of Metal, so he's ahead of Riz Ahmed in my books. I'm going to give this 9 Frenchmen out of 10, which, you know, they don't even speak English.
As Anthony Hopkins is there to remind you every other scene.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because this was co-written by Christopher Hampton, who did Atonement. I'm sure that was a thing he added to the script for that little note. Just like, oh, it's a French play, but now it's in England.
That's fun.
I see what you did there.
Comedy.
Why don't you go ahead?
Well, I know that I have talked a lot during this review, but that's because I really wasn't sure how much I really loved this, I think, until I started talking to you guys about it. And I was like, wow, no, I still can't stop thinking about this movie after watching it yesterday. And I am really excited to go back and watch it again, which I was not expecting to say about a movie that deals with memory loss. But like you were saying, Bradley, what I really loved about this is somebody who has a family member having dementia. I've loved the fact that this movie feels very honest and it's very real about the complications that go with not just dealing with somebody who's ill like this, but how utterly frustrating it can be. But instead of treating that as a failure of character, they treat that as just how human beings behave in situations like this, because they're never going to be easy. And I love that the movie pretty much says, hey, you know, this is just the ugly part of life that nobody wants to think about. The moment where your parents can't take care of you anymore, and unfortunately you also have your life to live. This movie is perfectly edited. I think that it has a perfect runtime, and the performances are so great from everybody, even people like Imogen Poots, who is basically just kind of a walk-on. I am surprised at how many people I would recommend this to. I think that this is a movie that everybody should, if you want to see a great emotional film that's not manipulative and just really want to see amazing acting, then this is definitely a nice little movie. And that is how I would describe this. It's a little film. I'm going to give this 8.5 out of 10 chicken dinners.
That's almost as many chicken dinners as what happened in this movie.
Again, or did they?
Did they? Yeah.
Who knows?
We don't know. I'm with y'all. This movie's good. I really like it. It is very theatrical. Like, you can tell when the act breaks hit and you're like, ah, the stage is supposed to go dark and I'm supposed to go to the bathroom right now, right? Like, that's what's going on here.
Let's go out to the lobby.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Looking at the other theatrical to film movies that have come out this year, it's much more cinematic than something like Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, but I would say probably a little less successful than something like One Night in Miami mm-hmm. in terms of that conversion. That doesn't mean it's bad. I don't dislike any of the films that I just brought up, but that is something to kind of take note of. The first 5 minutes, you know immediately, oh, cool, this was a play adapted into a movie, and we're going to go from there with that knowledge and that understanding. Huge shout out to my wife, Olivia Coleman, my wife, Olivia Williams, and my wife, Imogen Poots. I'm so proud of all of you. Please come home. I'm scared.
Oh, so you are a Mormon.
Polygamous peppers.
I am a Mormon. I can make that joke.
I set it up without even knowing I set it up, and Justin fucking Babe Ruth one-handed that shit all the way into the home run section. Respect, my dude.
Well played, sir. Well played.
Well played. So, thank you. Yeah, I'm a fan of this. It's not one of the ones that's like really solidifying in my list, just because I don't think it's as good as something like Minari or Nomadland or Sound of Metal or yada yada yada. I could just list off movies because that's just kind of what I do. Mm-hmm. But it is good, and it is very much worth your time. It's short. It's snappy. It's quick. It's got Anthony Hopkins. What's not to like?
Well, like a decade ago, that was almost a bad sign. It's like, it's got Anthony Hopkins. You
That's true.
Right? Right?
Oh, yeah.
I was literally about to bring up The Right. That movie's terrible.
I was just thinking one about brain that cell. Movie today.
one brain cell. But I'm gonna finish talking and give this 8.5 out of 10 times I thought about my mom and then got sad.
Oh. Gotta end on a bleak note.
That ending scene.
Oh, yeah. If you don't cry... during that ending scene, yeah. Then you're a sociopath. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
If you open up the DSM, then they're just going to show you that scene. And if you don't cry, then you're checked off the list.
If you can remember what the list had on it in the beginning with.